And if you want to be a part of the conversation too, then subscribe to my Patreon, www.patreon.com/Mr. Chaz, and join the conversation. Ask your own questions. Every single week, I bring on someone with a different expertise. Be a part of it for as low as $5 a month and get access to one-on-one coaching with me for as low as $20 a month.
What's my name? What's my name?
Welcome to Mr. Chaz's Leadership, Parenting, and Teaching Podcast, where I introduce you to the people that can help you on your parenting, teaching, or leadership journey. And today we have kind of a special episode because we're doing a sleep coaching consultation call. And we have actually two other people here joining me. We have Lauren at Isla Grace Sleep on Instagram, and we have one of my community members. Can I say your name?
Yes.
Pauline is here. She's in the community. About a month ago, I put out a feeler and just said, hey, I'm going to add kind of like a bonus benefit, you know, share in our private Facebook group. I said, just share, you know, your sleep challenges, struggles, and I'll choose, you know, one or two. I did another one earlier. I'm really excited for this conversation. And so this is it, but everyone else is going to eventually get to hear it. But Pauline is kind of the star here and the center of attention. So, and I have Lauren here. Her name is Lauren. I messed that up because her name is Lauren, but Isla Grace Sleep is her Instagram. So that's where you can find her. But they're going to be having a conversation, and I'm actually going to be quiet now and allow Pauline, and actually allow Lauren to kind of tell us a little bit about herself, and then Pauline will tell us what she is struggling with, and then we'll take it from there. Go ahead, Lauren.
Okay, so my name is Lauren Heffernan, and I am the owner of Isla Grace and the co-creator of the Baby-Led Sleep Approach. I'm a 3-time certified pediatric sleep specialist, and have my background is actually in education. I worked as a teacher. And so since then, my focus has been on attachment-based education, specifically around sleep. And so I work with anywhere from really like new parents prenatally all the way up to kind of age 6, 7. And I love working with sleep because it's never really about sleep. So I think it's like such a great place to start a conversation around what is a bigger topic, which ends up being parenting and pressures and like outside information and so many rules around what we're supposed to do and what we're not supposed to do. And it just leads to a really confusing kind of message, I think, for a lot of parents. So sleep is one of the first places, sleep and feeding, where we see a lot of these challenges. And so if you can kind of navigate those initially and see the bigger picture, then it's so beautiful down the road for your relationship, just in terms of navigating challenges. So I'm excited to be here. Thank you.
Mm, great intro. There's a lot there. Pauline, why don't you tell us a little bit, let's jump right into it and tell us a little bit about what you are struggling with in terms of sleep.
Well, I have a 3-year-old daughter, Natasha. Great. Have our usual bath, PJs on, brush teeth, read books, and then, but lately, I think it's been a few months now, she's kind of been waking up a lot, and it's every night, and we'll have to get up, go put her to bed, and she'll have us wait until she falls asleep. And I mean, we've tried a lot of things. I try to tell her, like, you know, what's wrong, and she says, like, I'm scared, and we'll go searching in her room. Like, okay, everything's safe, you're safe, making sure she's safe. And, you know, I keep telling her, like, okay, if you want to come get us, but we'll have to go take you back to your bed. So, I mean, great to put her bed, put her back to bed, but, you know, numerous times every night, kind of, you know, we need our sleep.
You're tired. Yeah. I think that's fair. So I just had a couple questions for you about everything. So how is bedtime going? So after you put her to bed, is she pretty happy and content to go to sleep?
For the most part, sometimes she wants to like prolong it and, you know, like, let's read another story. Let's read another story. And then like, okay, just one more. We'll have to, sometimes she fights it. Other times she will just fall asleep, but then she'll get up again.
And how soon is she getting up after bedtime?
The first time is usually about 1 or 2 hours after.
And then how about the rest of the night? Is it just usually that one wake, or do you have them?
That one, and then majority of the time there's like two or more times that she wakes up after that.
Yeah. So I think I love talking about toddlers because they're fascinating, first of all. There's like so much going on with toddlers in their head and their world. But one of the things that's really interesting that you pointed out is just about the fears piece. So oftentimes nighttime fears show up when there's too much separation. So we will get into these situations with our children where we're like looking for monsters, or we're doing monster sprays, or we're trying to like have a logical conversation with them about the fact that they're safe and that, you know, there's nothing to worry about. At the end of the day, monsters and fears only exist when parents are not there. And so it's not the monster or the, you know, scary part. It's, hey, I actually can't handle the amount of separation. It is really interesting when we look at toddler sleep, because a lot of the newer studies we have now on toddlers and sleep will say toddlers wake up on average 3 to 4 times a night, which is probably exactly what you're seeing. And oftentimes will take sometimes up to 20 minutes to fall back asleep. Many of them are seeking out their parents' support to help them go back to sleep. So what you're seeing in terms of the wake-ups is not abnormal. There's nothing like, hey, this is a big red flag. There might be something else going on. But that doesn't mean that you still can't do things to help, because you don't want to be doing this for the next 3 years. You're exhausted, and that's okay. So I think, again, one of the big things that I'm hearing from what you're telling me is that she's saying, I actually just can't handle the separation. It's too much separation. So one of the things about toddlers and some of the misunderstandings is that we assume that once they kind of get past that year mark, that they should be okay to handle long bits of separation, mostly because children go to school, right? And so they're away from us during the day. And so when we look at from an attachment perspective, children at that age still are not okay with long, long periods of separation. So what nighttime represents for a toddler or for a child is 12 hours of separation from the people that they love. So I suspect if you had her, if she was sleeping in your room, she'd probably like rustle around a little bit, get comfortable, and probably go back to sleep because you're there. So the issue is then with the separation, it's not really about sleep. So some of the things that parents do is one of the things that I talk to parents a lot about is bridging separation. So we help children to be able to hold on to us when they're apart from us. And so I find it's interesting because even as people, right? So if you were to ever meet someone on the street or whatever it might be, and you have a quick conversation with them, we don't do separation very well, even with strangers. Like, we would never walk away and say, okay, bye, I'll never see you again. We're always trying to focus on the next connection. You know, maybe I'll see you here tomorrow. You know, let me get your phone number. Maybe we could go out for a coffee. Like, we would never look at someone and say, okay, bye, I'll never see you again. So we're always focused on that next connection. And so with our children, we want to do the same thing, which is we want to help them to be able to bridge the separation and to focus on the next connection. So some of the things that you could do is really just making sure that you are getting that one-on-one connection time before bed as much as possible. So yes, you're doing your routine and there's some negotiating going on, which we can talk about. And toddlers are so good at that. And I love it. It's fun to watch. And you know, again, what it's really about with your routine is just trying to show her that you're meeting her needs before she asks. So if you know that when she goes to bed, she always, you know, she wants snuggles, she wants the three books, she wants the water, she wants the snack, whatever it might be before bed, it's about saying to her like, hey, I'm really looking forward to bedtime tonight. We're going to do our snuggles. We're going to do our three books. We're going to do our water. We're going to do our snack. It's about kind of jumping back into the lead as the parent and saying, I know you so well. Like, I've got this. So these are all the things that we're going to do, and making sure that you're filling that bedtime routine with those things before she asks you, because it puts you back in that parent role. But then at the same time, trying to make sure we're filling her bucket before bed with those snuggles, cuddles. You could even do something like, sometimes I'll have parents do a special time box where you can just fill it with a couple things that only come out at bedtime, and she can choose what activity she wants, what she wants to do with you. And so you're really just giving her that like undivided attention at bedtime. And then some of the things that you can do, and these take a bit of time for her to be, you know, to get to a place where she's more and more okay with the separation, is, you know, hey, can you hold on to my special shirt till the morning? Or, I'm going to tie an invisible string from my bed to your bed, or from my heart to your heart. There's really great books like The Kissing Hand is one of them, where the little raccoon, the mom kisses her hand and then she's got it all day. So to be able to go into bedtime and say, hey, you know what, you've got mommy's kissing hand. So any of these things where you're trying to bridge that separation, even saying like, I'll see you in my dreams. And then when she wakes up in the morning saying, like, I saw you, you were in my dreams, we did this together. Just to show her that we're really just trying to focus on that next connection. Another really great thing to do is set an activity up at night. And then, you know, at bedtime, instead of good night, we won't see each other for 12 hours. If you get out of bed, you have to go back into your bed. All that is focusing on the separation. It's, hey, actually, I can't wait to do this activity with you in the morning that we set up. So focusing on that next connection. And it's not an overnight fix to that challenge. What she's experiencing is very, very normal and healthy at this age. There's nothing kind of abnormal about it. But what she's saying when she's getting up is, I can't handle the separation. I can't handle the separation. I can't handle the separation. And so that's why we're trying to do all of these things to help her to feel connected to you when you aren't there. And so it takes a bit of time for these things to start to work. But, you know, even the t-shirt thing I found was like brilliant with my toddler. Like, can you hold on to my t-shirt, or can you hold on to my special, whatever it is, until the morning? You know, also even at bedtime, giving kind of gestures of sameness, like having a secret handshake that only the two of you know, so she feels really connected in that moment before bed as well. And then when you're handling these kind of overnight wakes, you know, I love that you said, you say to her, you know, I'll always come, or I'm going to come. And I think continuing to do the, instead of when you wake up, you have to go back to your room, it's like, when you wake up and you call, I will always come. You know, it's, you could say things like, it would be, you know, if you want to stay in your bed, I'll be right there. You just call, I will come. And so what starts to happen when you do this is sometimes you get, you know, 40 calls in a night just to say like, are you coming? Are you coming? Are you coming? But continuing to do these things so she can take it for granted. So she knows like whenever I wake up, I know for sure that mom's coming, and you know, and so then that when we start to do things like that, then children can take that for granted, and you might start to see some longer stretches at night as well. And some parents will even say, you know, I've got a space in our room if you need to come in. So if you want to sleep next to me on the floor here or wherever it might be, whenever you need to be here, you're more than welcome, or you can come. It just depends on what your comfort level is. So what would be your kind of ideal sleep situation? Like, where would you love for her to sleep? And would you want her in your room, in her room all night?
I mean, that would be ideal. I would want her to stay in her room all night. But we have let her sleep in our bed, especially when we're too tired already. And it's been many times, and we'll let her sleep with us. We let her know it's okay. But I don't know if we should, like, tell her, like, this is all our bed and that's your bed. I don't know if I should do that, or this is all of our beds. You can sleep wherever you want.
Well, where do you want, like, so when you say ideally you want her to sleep in her bed, like, here's the thing about boundaries and limits. Like, when we're setting limits with our children, they're unique to each family. There's not one set of limits or boundaries that we need to be setting. And so, you know, for one family, it might be, actually, I can't sleep with you in the bed because I don't sleep well. For another family, it might be, actually, I kind of like having you in here and it's comfortable and this is what we're going to do. So there's no real, you know, you have to say, this is our bed and that's your bed. And it's also okay if you like having her in there to have her in there as well. So, you know, it really depends on what it is that you want. And I think it's also okay. We don't have to be 1,000% all the time. It's okay to say not now, or, you know, to be able to make those decisions. I mean, it can be a bit easier if she just knows that when she calls, you go to her room and, you know, you will always come and you lie with her while she falls back asleep. But I think the thing with that strategy of, you know, when you call, I will always come, it has to be used in combination with the bridging. And the more you bridge that separation and, like, bring in those strategies over time, then what you'll start to see is she just will start to sleep longer and longer stretches. She's still going to wake up at night. It's, you can't stop the waking. We all wake up at night. It's normal. It's healthy. And if, as long as we don't have to go to the bathroom, or we're not cold, or, you know, our partner's not there, we go back to sleep. And so she's still going to keep waking. But what we're hoping is that she wakes up and says, if I need mom, I can just call and she'll come. And guess what? I've got this really great t-shirt that she asked me to hold on to. And, like, you know, I'm going to wrestle around, get comfortable, and go back to sleep.
Yeah, that t-shirt idea is really cool. Like, I definitely want to try that one and build more connections with her. I love those ideas.
Yeah, it's not a quick fix, but I think when you see it as a lasting piece, like, I'm not sure whether she's at daycare. Is she at any type of school, or is she home with you?
She used to be, but she hasn't been in over a year. Like, after the pandemic, she hasn't gone back yet.
Okay. So again, I would say that, you know, continue doing your bridging at night, but then you also have to figure out, like, do I want, like, am I okay with having her in the bed? Is that, you know, is that where I want her to be? Or, you know, again, is it better that she sleeps in her own room? And the only one who knows the answer to that is you. And I know that I struggled with my youngest because she's, like, the snuggliest little thing. And I really loved, you know, waking up to her little face smushed against mine. And so it was hard for me to set a limit because I wasn't 100% certain about it in myself. And I think she knew that, right? So I wasn't sure that I didn't want her in the bed. And so if I wasn't sure, she wasn't sure. And so that made kind of setting that limit a little bit more challenging. But I also felt a lot of outside pressure to not have her in the bed as well. So that made things harder.
Got it. Yeah, no, I think for us, I definitely want her to sleep in her own bed just so she's more independent.
Yeah. And even on the independence piece, one thing that I like to remind parents is that independence comes after years of being able to deeply depend. So unfortunately, so many, I'll never forget with my oldest, the very first thing I heard was she needs to sleep independently. And she was like 6 months old, which is why I went down the sleep training route, because I thought that that's what we had to do. But it's a misunderstanding of independence when we think, especially babies, that they're meant to sleep on their own, be independent, right? And so I would say, Pauline, it sounds like you have done a beautiful job of kind of following your heart and tuning into what's right for you and for her at this point, and allowing her that opportunity to depend. And I think the more that continues, the more you'll start to see that, because it actually works the opposite. It's, hey, I've been able to depend so beautifully for 3 years, and like, okay, I'm okay with a little bit more, and I'm okay with a little bit more, and I'm okay with a little bit more. And then we see independence. So, you know, I would say it's nice to hear that you've, you know, it sounds like you've found something, like your own little way for your family and what's worked to date. But I think if you just kept up with some of those bridging strategies, even I know parents will do put a little basket beside their child's bed and say, I'm going to drop a heart in every time I come and check on you. You don't go in 15 times. You can just dump the whole thing in. But even just these strategies so that she knows, oh, mom's coming. So.
Okay. No, I definitely want to work on the connection, and not just to help her sleep, but also just, I mean, deepen our relationship in general. That'll help.
Mm-hmm. And I was going to say too, I think, you know, when we're home with our children all day, you know, it's really, I like to personally just set, I put sticky notes around the house just to remind myself, just to like, when I see the sticky note, to really connect, or find times when I'm like, when I put down my phone, when I'm not working, when it's just one-on-one, because it's impossible for most parents to do it all day. So even just finding those solid times of connection where you're not distracted, and even before bed's a great time to do that little special time box and just have that time to do whatever activity it is.
Yeah, no, I think she would like a cool new
thing. Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm going to chime in here and just kind of use some of the things that you said, because there's so much in here. One of the things that I heard you say is to meet the physical and emotional needs before bedtime. So like, you know that they're always asking for the water or a snack, be proactive in it as opposed to being reactive. And parents, usually it's usually the same things that they're asking for, right? The snack, the bathroom, all those things. So meet those physical and emotional needs ahead of time. One of the ideas that you had that I like, there's two ideas I really liked, that the special handshake to kind of bridge that, to make that connection before bedtime, or whatever kind of special, I'm imagining a handshake with a hug or whatever it is. And then a little special box of little kind of like going this kind of like right before sleep activities. I think those are both really nice. Now, the other thing that you said a lot was focus on the next connection, which is really great, because this is something that, you know, we do in childcare facilities a lot. Like the suggestions you mentioned, now it won't necessarily be a t-shirt, which I think is a great idea, because it's not only just the shirt that it's yours, but it also probably smells like you too, right?
Yeah.
And so it is as close as you as a child can really get physically, and kind of like taking you in with their five senses, with their touch, with their smell, and just the sight of it. Also, the another thing that you said that is just a classic at the beginning of the year, I'm forever reading The Kissing Hand. And I have so many stories of children who really struggled. You know, I taught a lot of what I did was teach 3 to 5 year olds. And, you know, a lot of parents, the first time a child comes in a childcare facility or to daycare, a lot of times is when they're 3. And so that's something, that separation is something that children really struggle with, especially in the beginning of the year. And so reading The Kissing Hen was just an essential thing, me being trying to be proactive. And I have so many stories of, you know, of children. I think in the book, it says like, mommy loves me. And I just, I can visualize it so clearly. Of the last child who I did it with. And she would take her hand and she'd put it against her cheek and she'd say, mommy loves me. And not only was it just me reminding her when she was having a rough time, that would help her kind of like regulate and feel better, but also I would find her doing it herself kind of throughout the day and reminding herself. So The Kissing Hand, I very much, this is not a sponsored ad, but one thing that I very much, I put my name behind it. It's a great book for helping with the separation. And also like The Dream About Me is another thing that, you know, I use. I don't tell like during like nap time, I don't say dream about me, but it's a classic thing. Like during that time is when children really start to get like choked. They might've been great the whole like fine, emotionally like fine and great, playing, happy, smiling, laughing, all those. But when it comes to nap time, some children really struggle. And I think it's just part of it is just like the reflection and just, you know, and just kind of reflecting on the separation. You hear them say like, I want mommy, I want daddy. And that's kind of how they're communicating that, you know, I'm feeling uncomfortable with this separation. And I've kind of slowed down and I remember like this feeling of like being separated and missing the people I'm connected with the most, my parents. And that's something that I've done too. Just like, you know, close your eyes, think about, you know, mommy or daddy, whoever, think about it, close your eyes. And you can imagine whatever you want to do with them. You know, whether it's going to the park or just close your eyes. You don't have to tell me. Imagine. And when you wake up, tell me about it. Right. And yeah, they do. And I'll check up on them too. And I'll say, oh, did you dream? And a lot of times they will have like stories and they'll tell me. Sometimes they'll be like, no, but you know, sometimes they really do. So I just kind of wanted to review that. And then on the last thing that you said, boundaries are unique to each family. And I know that, and you kind of touched on it too, Lauren, when, you know, you were talking about how you're unsure of what you really want to do. And, you know, I always say children thrive off of consistency. So while, yes, it can be, you can, you know, it doesn't always have to be like clear cut and like never go back and like strict. I always say like, you know, boundaries, you know, but with structure, but with flexibility. You know, what would you suggest for a parent that is really going back and forth. And they're like, you know, I really like the connection with you, but you know, you're kicking me in your sleep, man. And I just can't have it. Like I want you here, but I don't want you here.
Yeah.
So like, how do we, you know, so talk a little bit more about that, especially since that's something that you kind of struggled with too.
Yeah. And I think like the first place that I go to with parents is just like eliminating the outside pressure. I mean, if you're physically not comfortable, I see this a lot, especially with breastfeeding parents, sometimes getting to a place with children who are older, especially like more highly sensitive children who are nursing at bedtime for an hour. And the parent is wanting to do what they feel is best for the child. And they like that time, but at the same time, it might be getting painful or something like that. And there is just this fear of making that change with setting those boundaries, because they don't want to upset the child or because they still haven't figured out, you know, it's kind of scary to make that big transition. So the first thing I say to parents is just making sure that you're 100% sure about what it is that you want to do, because if it's outside pressure that's forcing you to do it, or that's like kind of pressuring you to make the decision, you're not going to feel good about it once it happens, right? So I work with a lot of families who will make the transition into putting their child in a crib or in their own room earlier than they actually want to, and then they can't sleep themselves because they're missing them, because, you know, they're constantly getting up to check on them. So the first thing about that I would just say is just making sure that you're sure that it's your decision. And when you talk about the consistency piece and the boundaries piece, I mean, I think number one is children feel safe with limits. You know, I think sometimes we forget that we don't want to set a limit because we don't want our children to cry. And so we're afraid to set limits around things, but children actually thrive with limits and boundaries. And it helps to put us into that place. Again, they want to know that we're leading them, not bossing, but leading, and that we know what's best for them and we know what's best for our family. And so I think that that's an important piece of the boundaries and limits as well. And the only person who knows what's best is the parent. So there isn't really one kind of thing in terms of, you know, a set boundary for everyone other than car seat straps in the hospital when you're coming home with your baby. But when you're looking at things like that kind of in between, I love a floor bed if parents are comfortable with that. And they can do that really at any age. I've seen a lot of parents do it even with babies. But your child can have a sleep surface and you can have a separate sleep surface. And so if you want to join them in the middle of the night, just to snuggle them, put them back to sleep, but then you don't have to get kicked all night. And so that's kind of a great in-between for families who still aren't sure about that. And then sliding a body pillow in there when you leave so that they don't know that you're gone. You can even put a t-shirt that smells like you over top of the body pillow to, again, bridge that separation. They're still getting the proprioceptive input of being like squished into that little body pillow. But again, I think like you bring up a good point about just, you know, there are boundaries that are kind of set in stone. There are some that are maybe a little bit more flexible. But if you don't internally think that it's a boundary, and I think so many parents these days, like, I know I struggle to set boundaries in general. So, you know, in life, boundaries are hard for me. So then when it comes time to my children, it makes it even more difficult. But, you know, when you were talking about the bedtime and the books, so some parents will set a boundary around how many books they read. And again, we're, you know, trying to take the lead in a sense of like, I know you so well that guess what? Before you tell me you need your snack and you need your water and you need your book, like, I already know because, you know, I love you so much and I know you so deeply. And so I know what we're going to do and it's going to be the two books. Now, most children the first night then will say, You said two, I would like three. And so I heard this really interesting analogy by Dr. Gordon Neufeld, who talked about frustration. So he talks about this circle of frustration. So when children get frustrated, it's their body trying to affect change, right? So your daughter's saying, actually, I'd like three books. And you're like, nah, nah, nah. And so the frustration comes into the traffic circle, let's say. Now, if you just say, all right, let's do three, the frustration comes out. But guess what? Tomorrow night, it's going to be the same thing, right? Because it wasn't really a boundary. There was no real limit. Now, what we really hope to happen is that the frustration stays in the traffic circle, but there is some emotion that comes out as a result. So, you know, we hope that because frustration has to come out of your body. It's either going to come out in tears or it's going to come out in aggression, which, you know, whatever, but, you know, ideally it's coming out in tears. And so, you know, when we say actually, no, you know, there's not two books, there's not three books, there's only two, we would hope that there would be some sort of emotion around that boundary that we support, you know, by making eye contact and physical contact if they'll let us, and waiting for them to accept that boundary. And then we move forward. The next night, you might see it a bit again, but then usually they figure it out. And so that's just them accepting that boundary and then the frustration coming out in some tears. So I also think it's interesting because when we are frustrated, we're kind of in that sympathetic nervous system, right? And then once we have that big cry, because we've accepted the boundary, we're like in that parasympathetic nervous system, which is where we want to be to fall asleep. So anyways, it's typical that when we set a boundary, there's emotion, and that's fair. I mean, it's true for adults too, right? So if someone sets a boundary with us, we're going to have emotions or frustrations or whatever that might be. And it's normal and it's healthy, but it also says, hey, I've got you. Like, this is what's right for our family. And you know, and I'm here and I know it's really hard, but guess what? I'm right here with you.
Okay. Yeah, that's definitely something I need to practice. And yeah, that's what I was worried about, like going through the whole emotional drama that comes with it. But as you said, like eventually it'll. Yeah, thank you for that insight.
And I think, Pauline, one thing, Chaz, I'm not sure how long we're allowed to speak for, but I'll just say one last thing, is that I think, as parents, we're really uncomfortable with emotion. And I think we are a generation of parents that are uncomfortable with emotion because we never, when we had big feelings, our parents sent us to our room. They told us to go to timeout. You know, that you're too much for us, so you need to go. And so now we're trying to raise children, and we don't have any strategies. We never had a lot of opportunities to co-regulate. We were just left alone to figure it out. And so we don't even have those strategies. So for us, you know, we hear a baby crying. It's like everybody in the room just tenses up and like needs to make it stop as soon as possible. But the really beautiful thing that I feel like we're starting to talk about moving forward is like just the importance of letting our children know that I love you angry. I love you excited. I love you happy. I love you sad. I love you mad. Like all of those things. I love you through all of these big feelings. And I'm not going to try to stop them because they make me uncomfortable. So, you know, I would say we have to treat our children in the same way that we treat any other human that we love who is having a hard time. We sit, if we can, get down to their level, make physical contact if they'll let us. Sometimes in the beginning, it's a lot of flailing and kicking. And, you know, so we're making physical contact, eye contact, and we're listening and we're waiting. We're not fixing it because with boundaries, you know, no, you can't eat cookies for breakfast. And so, you know, I'll sit with you while you release all that emotion, but then really as parents, like trying to then stay calm in those moments so that our children don't feel like they're too much.
When we go through those things, I do try to have her let it out and help her name all the feelings. Like, that you're sad or it's okay. So that's definitely something that all parents have to learn. Like, you know, we're parenting ourselves in that process.
That's a huge starting point. I always say a lot of times, too, if you look at any kind of sleep challenge, it's oftentimes rooted in a fear of emotion, right? So we sometimes will do things over and over and over again, and we're exhausted and we're frustrated and we're angry and we're resenting it, but we can't change it because if we change it, our children are going to cry. But wait till they become toddlers, right? Like there's not a lot you can stop.
Just the emotion, accept the emotions, all the emotions, the range of emotions are okay to have. And I also liked what you said about, you know, it's got to come out some way. And if it doesn't come out, then that's where the real concern is, right? Because then it's just stuck in your body. And that's going to compound. And that's going to, you know, grow into other, you know, problems that are going to be a lot harder to solve than just accepting the emotion and allowing them. And even too, as time, especially over time, helping them express their emotion. I think that's like the, you know, kind of the other level to it too. It's not even just accepting it, it's just allowing, not even just allowing them to have emotions, but helping them express their emotions. And maybe not always, you know, we're not always going to do like the lesson, like the big lesson in the moment. But, you know, sometimes they're in the very small moments of them wanting, maybe it's them wanting the cookie, or it's them wanting to go outside, but, you know, can't go outside because it's, you know, because it's raining and we're not prepared, or whatever it is, and kind of helping them and talking it out and really being tuned in to how they're feeling and helping them express that. I think that's, for me, in my mind, that's kind of like the next level. That's like kind of like the level two. And yeah, maybe your your toddler, your 1 year old isn't at the point where they're putting together sentences to express it, but you can maybe put together some sentences for them so that when they are one, that's vocabulary, like you said, with the naming of emotions, but like putting together sentences about like about their experience, right? Almost kind of jumping into their body, and you know, there is, you know, taking, there's the thought process and there's the expression of like, you know, walk a day in their shoes. And I talk about more than just walking in their shoes, but walking in their experience, right? It's not about just being in the shoes, but like imagining what those rocks must feel like in those shoes and really, you know, feeling like you're really helping them articulate that. Yeah, that's emotions. Emotions are okay. Allow them to have it. Help children. And I really think that that's one of like, that should be one of our goals as adults, whether you're a parent or a teacher, or I think even leaders in companies should be, one of your goals should be to help the people you're leading, the children you're leading, express how they feel, and to create safety so that they feel safe to do that. This is really important for children because that's going to be a skill that they're going to need to navigate so they don't hold it all in and don't end up having to eventually have to release it through therapy because they've had so much, you know, built up and now they need to go to a professional to, you know, learn how to even start expressing their emotions and being okay with their emotions. You know, it's important for teachers because it's, you know, that's your clue to know kind of what you need to teach them and what they're really needing. I talk about like meeting their needs and teaching them to meet their own needs. Part of that is expression of self. And it's really important if you're in a company, anyone who's an employee, like kind of knows, or anyone who's worked in like a toxic work environment, it's, you know, people don't feel safe to express how they feel or to go to the boss and say like, hey, I know you made this decision. You know, from my perspective, this is kind of what I'm seeing. And I want to share my perspective and share how I'm feeling. Or so-and-so said something that really made me feel uncomfortable in the meeting. And I need to say it because otherwise I'm not going to feel safe at work. And then it's going to impact my work performance. Like, this is an expression of self. Being able to express yourself and your feelings and your thoughts are essential parts of navigating through life. And really, I would say being human and a healthy, a mentally and emotionally healthy human.
I love that because it's so hard. Like, I think, you know, I always say I feel so lucky to have had my children because it's forced me this piece. Like, it's really forced me to look inside. Because as you were mentioning about that buildup of emotion, is that children will do anything to preserve the relationship with their primary caregivers. And if they learn over and over again that actually my big feelings make you uncomfortable, they will stop sharing and expressing those feelings. So I think it's beautiful when you're talking about teachers, because so many teachers become a part of, hopefully, that village of attachment. And so children feel safe expressing emotion with people in their village of attachment. That's why if the child is not necessarily attached to a teacher, you know, sometimes parents will notice that they go to school all day and there's no emotion. You know, oftentimes they'll hear, oh, they were good all day, they didn't cry. So they hold it all in. And then they get home and the parents has just had a long day and they're picking up their child from school and it's just like explosive, right? It's all coming out, sharing with the people that they love. Yeah. But when teachers can get into that village of attachment, like, that is so critical. And also because it provides a beautiful opportunity to model, you know, how we handle that emotion, because children are just like little sponges, right? So they see what we do. There was a funny example, a parent that I talked to who ripped newspaper, I guess, when he was really frustrated. And so it was interesting because he was saying that his 6 or 7 year old was starting to do that when he was frustrated as well. So, you know, we have all these things that we do when we have these big feelings. Unfortunately, a lot of adults were not very good at doing this work so that we can better model for our children and accept all of their feelings.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and that's, yeah. And you're right. That's something that we need to, that's a skill that sometimes that we need to relearn or learn for the first time, so that we are able to show, because it's not good for our emotions to just be stuck in our body all day and feel and have no one who we feel safe to, you know, to talk about it, to express it to. Yeah. I'm going to go ahead and Pauline, do you have any last questions before we wrap up?
That was it. Like, definitely going to go away with a lot of new things to try and change up our routine a little. And I know it's not going to be, but really hope we get there. Thank you so much for today and
absolutely. It was so nice speaking to you. And I think you're just so on the right track. I think, you know, like everything in parenting, there's no quick fixes. So, you know, you're in a relationship with your child. And so it takes time and keep building, but everything she's doing is very normal at this age. So I think that bridging will just kind of take you to the next level and hopefully start getting those longer stretches of sleep.
Lauren, thank you so much. Pauline, thank you so much for coming on, having this conversation. You guys can find Lauren at Isla Grace Sleep on Instagram. Are you on TikTok too?
I started, but I don't understand it. I'm trying so hard.
Give her her first followers on TikTok, Isla Grace Sleep on TikTok as well.
Yeah.
Give her first batch of followers. Go follow her on TikTok and go follow her on Instagram, and learn more about sleep. And if you like, she has services too. I'm going to put some stuff in the show notes. And everyone, you guys have a great night's sleep. Goodbye.
Good night. Thank you.